SCP-5251, Flax. Between the jobs of being a Foundation researcher and a Foundation field agent, there's no question that the agent has the much more precarious task. Often thrown headfirst into unknown situations, armed with little more than a pistol and good luck, it's a wonder that anyone signs up for the job. Researchers, on the other hand, are generally kept pretty safe. Anomalies under containment usually are not especially dangerous at any given moment, and any really dangerous tasks can be left to the hapless D-class that researchers can toss at the problem. Of course, this is the SCP universe, however, and there's always an element of the unknown and unpredictable when dealing with anomalies. SCP-5251 is an especially perplexing anomaly that leads a few researchers into a very awful situation before they even know it. Let's take a look. The article begins with a notice at the top from the HMCL supervisor of Site-33, Ksenia Limonova. In it, she states that this file is permanently locked, and reading it is forbidden without adhering to specific instructions. Do not attempt to understand what the object is or what it does, and do not attempt to derive it from these instructions. The object is neither Euclid nor Keter. At the top of the unmodified file from 1993, a general notice from Limonova states to not discuss it or describe it. If you see it, stand still and shut up. If you need to tell someone about it, take their hand, drag them to a terminal, and point your finger at this notice. This notice takes priority over the special containment procedures below, which should be ignored. We then get to the documentation itself, with massive amounts of info being completely blurred out, including the SCP number, containment class, containment procedures, and description. The description mentions nearby objects and objects with known properties, such as a fountain pen of known monetary value, as well as a person of interest, but there's very little to go off of here. An addendum contains an experiment log, run by Limonova and another doctor, Vershinin, during which several objects with varying traits were placed nearby the anomaly. The results seem to imply that some of the objects retained their traits, while others didn't. Afterwards, Limonova messages Vershinin, stating how fantastic this is, as she's never seen anything remotely like this, and the applications are endless. She's never had such a clear direction for future tests. Vershinin replies that he's in shock that they're not just retreading ground covered by someone else, and it's a little odd that he never worked this out himself, as it seems so obvious. Another doctor, Petrov, asks Limonova what she said that other person's name was, as he's having some trouble with her comment. Limonova replies with the person's name, and although it's still blurred out, Petrov thanks her, and says that perhaps he just never thought to investigate, as he was clearly just using it for a mundane purpose. Limonova says to not question it, but it still worries Vershinin, as why would the person be hiding it if he thought it was more mundane than it is? That also doesn't explain why he also had a completely normal one, as he doesn't know anybody who has two. He also says to reply to comments by clicking the link below them, as Petrov is confusing the thread. Limonova just tells him to stop overthinking things, and if they feel the need to do something with the anomaly, run it by her first. Petrov says that he has been doing that already, and it's 10 times faster than his one at home, and does a way better job of making his something not something. Limonova tells him that she doesn't actually care about what he's doing, but he should at least bother to take notes while he does it, because then it would constitute a test. We're given another experiment log, this time just from Petrov, in an attempt to test the anomaly's limits. He put things everywhere in the testing room and into the anomaly, including some things from home. The results are unclear, to say the least, but it seems that Petrov picked one object up and couldn't tell anything about it. Limonova remarks that this is consistent with their first results, and it's interesting to note that the anomaly scales with something, though she's a little wary of burning out the motor. Petrov wonders if it's consistent, as he can't find the last dataset to compare. Limonova tells him that the file is attached, and Petrov eventually finds the file, but says that it's empty. Vershinin says that this explains the other person's modifications, as he must have been looking to increase something. Limonova replies that he wasn't able to get it higher than a certain point, as he wasn't a wizard, but those modifications may have actually been what did something to him, though it's hard to tell. Petrov wonders what she means by it being hard to tell, as they all saw the report. Vershinin asks for a link to the report, with the other two both responding with the link, although both are blurred out. Vershinin conducts another test, this time resulting in a failure. He had difficulty opening it up, and even after he managed to do so, the feeling became worse as time went on. He found himself unable to do something that he should have been very familiar with, and after a while he became frustrated. He tells the others that he's not sure why he ran this test, as it seemed so clear to him on Friday, but then he came back on Monday to check the results, and it's gone. He asks the others if he mentioned his intentions to either of them, with Petrov just chalking it up to age. Limonova says that she sent both of them her plan of possible experiments, so maybe he was just running one of those. Vershinin and Petrov both reply that they never received such a list, but she tells Vershinin that she has his acknowledgement of receiving it right here. Vershinin says that he must have said that in error, as he has received nothing from her. Limonova remarks that she actually apparently sent him an empty file, but he didn't receive that either. A Foundation IT member, McFenton, chimes in to inform them that an email was sent from Limonova and was received by the other two, although Vershinin never opened it. McFenton checks it again and can confirm something, hoping that clears things up, which Vershinin says that it does. Petrov asks if she can check his email as well, but he gets no response. In another experiment log, Petrov says that he has unplugged the damn thing and wheeled its trolley down to the other side of the site until someone replies to anything he says. Limonova comments that that's very funny, asking where the anomaly is, and either he tells her where it is, or she'll eat his head. Vershinin remarks that he doesn't actually see any correspondence from him in the discussion. Petrov replies, but his message is entirely blurred out, and Limonova says that yes, that would be a slight problem. McFenton chimes in again to say that analysis confirms that no person named that, presumably Petrov, has ever been assigned to this project. Vershinin asks if she's sure, and while she says that the analysis is conclusive, she could swear she remembers a Petrov from the last time she checked this project. Limonova says that if the three of them are in consensus, then they either have a memory injection scenario or a reality erasure scenario. She asks if they're both certain that Petrov exists or existed, which they both are, and Petrov himself replies, although his message is still completely blurred. Limonova remarks that the anomaly is clearly messing with things, and she's going to defer this upwards. In the meantime, avoid interacting with it as much as possible. Vershinin replies that that shouldn't be too difficult, as they don't know where it is. Limonova tells McFenton to scour the security feeds to find Petrov, as they know he moved the anomaly last night. As far as she knows, there's nothing nocturnal here, so be wary of anything that moves. If she sees something that she doesn't want to pay attention to, focus on it, although that might not be possible. McFenton replies that she'll take notes on anything she sees, but she emphatically tells her to not write anything down, as they can't trust any recorded information. She then makes an edit, telling her to write things down, as it will still be useful to have a reference for comparison, She also tells Vershinin to look through prior correspondence to see what holes he can find, and to try and find anything that conclusively proves Petrov did or did not exist. She also tells Petrov to find some way to communicate with them, as this project thread is not working. She says to leave notes, carve stuff into the walls of her office, scream in her face, injure her, anything to prove that he exists until he is acknowledged. They'll reconvene in the morning with their results, and she'll treat this internally as an experiment. Petrov replies to the thread, but it's again entirely blurred out. The next day, Limonova posts that she recalls from yesterday that she was working with Vershinin and McFenton from IT. She's completely confident in this recollection, and she asks what they found out last night. She doesn't get any response, however, and begins to exclaim that it's happening to her as well. Vershinin finally replies, however, stating that he didn't turn on his alarm clock, and he apologizes. He went over their messages from yesterday, but can't find any holes. The missing person just doesn't exist, and the SCP must have planted that memory inside of them. Limonova, however, remarks that McFenton confirmed that she sent both of them her list of proposed experiments. Vershinin has spent all night reading and rereading this conversation, so he's pretty sure. Limonova replies that one of them is compromised then, asking if he remembers Petrov's face. McFenton then says that she's been looking over the site's security feeds and spoke to Counterconceptual, who gave her something to help. She then mentions the object and a time, but the message is blurred. Vershinin replies that there seems to be some data loss in that message, asking her to try again. McFenton sends another two messages, both blurred out, before stating that there were no significant events that night before 7:02 and after 7:10. She also includes a recording snippet, and Limonova just swears in response. She also mentions to Vershinin that he used the phrase missing person instead of Petrov's name, asking him if he can confirm his name. Vershinin replies that he can't, and honestly, he has no idea who she's talking about. Petrov replies to this post, his message completely blurred out, and finally gets a reply from Limonova 20 years later. Petrov replies to her with a series of questions, all blurred out, and all of his posts are still coming from 1993, meaning there's some sort of message time travel going on here. She says that she's on Nestix, a drug produced by the Anti-Mimetics Division that stop you from forgetting things and help you remember things you've forgotten. It's the perfected form of the same drug that's going to kill McFenton in a few hours, and although that's her fault, she's come to terms with it. Petrov replies again, and Limonova says that it's only been 20 years for her, but she doesn't think either of them know how long it's been for him. She needs him to do something as soon as he can, though, as the drug that McFenton ingested is growing more potent by the second, and will reach its critical point far before she metabolizes it. McFenton will be able to perceive him soon, though she doesn't know exactly when, and she'll be dead less than 10 minutes later. It's imperative that McFenton passes on a message to her. Petrov replies with a lengthy, blurred message containing numerous questions, but Limonova tells him not to discuss it, talk about it, or even theorize about it. She won't confirm anything to him until she knows that it's safe, as his situation is precarious. He's not dead, but she thinks it's better if he doesn't know the details for now. His questions will have to wait, as he needs to tell her, via McFenton, to shut down the project, to stop research, and to stop discussing it. She can see the messages between him and McFenton already, so she knows he does an excellent job. Petrov replies with another question, and Limonova tells him that he gets to save them, and she promises that they'll find a way to save him. Back in 1993, Limonova states Petrov's name, and asks Vershinin and McFenton to repeat it back to her. Vershinin can't see the name, but McFenton at least sees the space in the message reserved for the name, thanks to the rudimentary Nestix she's on. Limonova then sends another message stating that she also can no longer see the name or remember it, and Vershinin suggests that perhaps it's due to her rereading the written name. It's possible that it was her adamance against reading the previous conversation that protected her for so long, and he wonders if there's a name for information that's hazardous. Petrov then sends a blurred message, and this time McFenton responds to it, exclaiming that she can read it. She asks if he's okay, and he sends several more missing messages, telling her to do something. Meanwhile, Limonova says that she finally heard back from the higher-ups, after calling them several times, and they basically told her to just deal with whatever this is on her own. She went up to Russian command and then European, and she didn't see much point in going higher. McFenton says that there's a message from Petrov asking about her specifically, and Limonova tells her to be on guard, as there's a fair chance she's speaking to the anomaly. She then tells Limonova that Petrov wants her to stop research and to lock this file, with him being pretty insistent about it. Limonova, however, assumes that this is the anomaly's agenda, and asks her to get some sort of verification out of him. She says that she's trying to get him to tell her about what happened to him, as she doesn't really know him that well. Plus, it might help them work out how to get him back. She doesn't send any more messages, however, and the next day, Vershinin posts that he received word from Site 11 that McFenton is dead from a hemorrhagic stroke. Part of her amygdala is apparently just missing, with the exposed blood vessels having bled everywhere. She would have suffered minutes of pure agony. Limonova replies that that's horrifying, but she supposes that these things happen. She knew her a little and says that she loved her job, or so she'd tell her, and she hopes that she felt fulfilled. Vershinin, however, says that he's not sure she's seen the gravity of this. Amygdalas handle long-term memory, and he remarks on what the in-development drug does that she encouraged McFenton to take. Limonova is outraged that he's saying she killed her, as if he wouldn't have done the same thing to save their forgotten friend. Vershinin says that he can't answer that, because he doesn't know him. He never existed, as the anomaly made him up. So she killed McFenton for nothing. He then leaves the message chain. Limonova posts that whatever it is, it wins. One person is dead, one person hates her, and one might not have existed at all. It's just her now, and she's done. She doesn't know if it can read this, but she wants it to know that she hates it. She's going to lock the file, as that's what it wanted. Petrov then sends two more messages, both completely missing. 20 years later, Limonova responds, saying that she's in the future, she's always still here. Petrov did good, saving her and Vershinin's lives. It was too late for McFenton, though, and too late for him. Maybe back then she would have locked the file anyway, but she had to be sure. She's sorry that she had to use him for that, but McFenton and her faith in him was the only thing between her and believing that he didn't exist. Without Petrov's help, they probably wouldn't be having this conversation. Petrov sends a lengthy, blurred message, and Limonova says that she'll never be able to, not if he wants her to still be able to talk to him. She thinks that having just one person knowing how it works is safe. Of course, she knew, but if she told him, he wouldn't have done it. He has to remember that it's not his fault. She set that wheel in motion, not him. He only took advantage of it, and even that was under her instruction. She feels far worse about it than he does. Petrov sends another message, and Limonova says that she can talk to him now, so it makes sense that she should be able to see him. She asks if he has a physical form, but we can't see his response. She says that she thinks all he needs to do is wait until her time. She'll be at the site in the morning, and they should be able to rendezvous somewhere at her old office. Nestics in 2013 are absolutely safe, and she'll be sure to maintain her dose until then, as it's not like she can forget to top up. Petrov sends another message, apparently asking about Vershinin, and she says that he's fine, but he doesn't work for the Foundation anymore, so he was wiped. He's forgotten that Petrov existed, but the anomaly convinced him that he didn't exist in the first place, so maybe it's better this way. Petrov says something, and she says that she knows, and they all knew. He asks something else, and she says that she doesn't know. He never would have admitted it, even to himself. She tells Petrov to try and hold that thought, as it'll keep him going. She'd keep him company, but she doesn't see him replying to her at all between his time and hers, so she doesn't think she can. She tells him to stay strong, as she believes in him. Petrov then sends a large series of messages, spanning from 1993 all the way to 2025, with no responses from Limonova. So, this is obviously a fairly confusing one, so let's try and clear a few things up, starting with the anomaly itself. SCP-5251 is a washing machine that apparently functions even better than a normal one, leading the original creator, as well as Petrov, to use it to do their own laundry. Objects placed inside of the washing machine are merely cleaned, but objects in the vicinity of the machine are wiped of their known properties in the minds of those that know them. Problems arose when Petrov overfilled the machine as part of a test, as this directly led to him being affected and the others forgetting that he even existed. There are various theories as to why it took Limonova the longest to forget he existed, until she took Nestics, with one theory suggesting that she knew Petrov the least of the group, slowing the effect for her. This effect extended to various parts of the document and associated documents, leading to a great deal of confusion amongst the researchers as they tried to figure out what was happening. What isn't so clear, however, is how Limonova managed to communicate with Petrov in 2013, despite Petrov still sending messages from 1993. Thanks to the usage of Nestics, Limonova was able to tell him in the past to convince McFenton to tell Limonova's past self to lock the document and stop all research. McFenton, in 1993, took some highly experimental Nestics and was able to very briefly communicate with Petrov before dying. Thankfully, this was enough time for Limonova to be convinced to lock the document, saving her and Vershinin's lives. Petrov then continued to exist in some form, with one of the article tags suggesting that he becomes a pattern screamer, a consciousness within the fabric of reality. He was supposed to meet up physically with Limonova in 2013, but she never showed, and he's apparently stuck in that existence now, possibly forever. It's a tragic story, to be sure, and yet another reminder of how cruel the SCP universe can be. One minute you're just doing some boring research on a weird washing machine, and the next you're stuck within the fabric of reality for all eternity.